Welcome back to the Marketing Podcast, where we discuss marketing science, case studies that reveal successful marketing techniques, and strategic marketing analysis, where we model the data and turn it into financial forecasts so you have predictable revenue. I'm your host, Brandon White, and this is Marketing. Hey, Rich, thanks for coming over today. I'm glad we made this happen. I saw you were talking about third-party cookies, and I said, I got to talk to this guy. And we both live in the same town. And I think we probably passed each other, but never met.
Yeah, it is good to formally meet you. And we are, 2.6 miles away from each other. And yeah, here we are now talking about third-party cookies. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, you've worked at TechTarget for 15 years, which is what I don't know if this is the right way to call it. It's really a media site with walled garden where you have content inside of the walls so that you're not relying on these third-party cookies. For the audience, can you just talk a little bit about TechTarget and then we can jump into third-party cookies? Because this is third-party cookies is going to change online marketing.
Yep, you're absolutely right. So,
or lack of third-party cookies, I should say.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. So yeah, TechTarget. Started my career there right out of school. I've been there. It'll be 16 years in June, which is crazy to think about, especially in this industry and especially in sales and especially where we are in the Bay Area and on the coast here now. But yeah, so what does TechTarget do? We are a B2B technology publishing company. What does that mean? It means that we write content on the internet that speaks to serious tech and line of business buyers. And we have a lot of folks writing very granular content that really speaks to two types of people. One, a tech buyer, or two, a line of business person who is signing POs that a tech buyer recommends to them. And people really only come to the sites that we publish for one of two reasons. One, they have a pain point. Something is not working. It's not functioning. It's not running the way it should. And two, more importantly for our customers, folks come to our websites when they're researching vendors, when they have a project, when they're looking for a vendor-neutral resource of information to help make a more informed purchase decision, that's where we come in. So we have overall 1,000 people on our payroll who create content, 150 full-time editorial folks, a staff of analysts from our enterprise strategy group acquisition, as well as expert contributors. And essentially, we're marrying up those tech and line of business buyers with content to help them do their jobs more effectively. And then in turn, we serve that content up to our customers who are B2B technology vendors to help them with their outbound sales and marketing motions. And that's what TechTarget is in a nutshell.
Well, I think that, and thanks for explaining that for listeners. The crazy part is TechTarget has been around since 1999. There's not a ton of quote unquote internet companies from that era that still, I mean, Amazon obviously is the big one and they're, I don't know that you would consider Apple or some of these other ones, but that TechTarget was a pure internet really company that was on the forefront of attracting potential customers via content and then helping them. But also at the end of the day, you sell those interests to vendors who can help satisfy that customer.
Yeah, but the value exchange is exactly that. Folks come to our sites to learn, to be informed. That's the value to them. Our editorial team essentially is providing that value to them. Now, the value exchange is they have to register and opt into that content and so that we can monitor their activities with us. And then we in turn sell that data to our customers. And yeah, we were born online back 25 years ago now. Our first site is the first site that I actually sold on in 2008. It's called search400.com. And for those of you who aren't nerds, the AS400 is an old operating system. It's the IBM iSeries. And so we started with that one site and it was super nerdy content, like everything you would need to know on that operating system. You would never in your wildest dreams go to that website for fun, like on your lunch break or like you're trying to wind down at night before Netflix. You were not going to search400.com. And that was the beauty of the model we had, right? You would never go to that site accidentally. You only go there when you have the mindset of, hey, I have a pain point. I have a problem. I have a need. I'm going to go to this site. And I don't know if we did that by design, but it really has benefited us over the years because all the data that we've captured, and we'll talk more about this, is all very actionable for our customers because it's all about the right people in the right mindset at the right time.
I think one of the things that we should talk just a little bit about, because marketers tend to sometimes, I'm going to use this word loosely, Rich, trick people to get their information. And TechTarget actually has real information that helps the user. It's very technical in nature. And I think the other important part is that it's also helping that tech buyer, because it is matching them with a vendor who could solve their problem. For the most part, you're not going to just sell those. You don't have customers who spend $20 to get a lead. That's not the customer you have. I mean, they need to spend basically five figures to even start playing in this realm. So in that way, you don't just help them with content. And I sound like probably an infomercial here, but I'm a nerd. Yeah. And I do know the difference, because there's plenty of sites out there that are just selling leads. Like, hey, let me write some crappy thing or trick you that you think you're going to do this and you get the information. And there's no real value. So TechTarget is a company and you are public, so people can look you up.
Yeah, that is rampant in the space and it's always has been. You talk about like lower quality, shoddy tactics to generate leads. And that's been in the industry forever. And it's more and more so. And we can talk more about that too. But yeah, TechTarget, it's a valuable exchange, right? It's mutually beneficial for both our audience as well as our customers. And in this for the long haul, as you can see, me being there almost 16 years, we're not trying to dupe anybody into doing anything that's not going to be beneficial to their business.
And jumping right into third-party cookies, the thing about it is you've never had to rely on third-party cookies. But for listeners out there, you're obviously into marketing because you're listening to this show. You know that third-party cookies are going away. Chrome is phasing them out. Chrome, depending on what you read, I think Chrome has 60% of the market in the US, 65% worldwide. Second, I was actually surprised, Rich, I looked it up today, is actually Safari in the US, which holds about 30, and then everybody else, Firefox and all these other smaller internet browsers out there. But Chrome is said, hey, look, we're doing away with third-party cookies, which means that marketers are not going to be able to follow people across the internet anymore, is effectively what it means.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And for those of you who are in this industry, and if you're listening, you likely are, you've heard about this, right? It's been in talks for a while. And you mentioned Firefox and Safari, they've already done this. Mm-hmm. Now, why it's so much more meaningful now is because, like you said, Chrome owns 2/3 of the internet. And so now they already started in January with 1% rollout. And by the end of 2024, it's going to be 100% of Chrome browsers. And to your point, I was reading a study from Adobe, and I think the study, and I'll look it up exactly, yeah, but 45% of folks are relying and spending a majority of their marketing expenditure on tactics leveraging third-party cookies. So this is going to have a massive impact on a lot of people, and a lot of people don't have a plan yet. And it's going to come up in more and more board level meetings. Hey, what's our plan? Right. So I think if you're in marketing or you're a business stakeholder, you need to have a plan and you need to be aware of the impact that it's going to have on your business. And we'll talk more about it, but it's not just digital advertising. That's a big piece of it, but it goes deeper than that as far as the impact.
What else do you think it's going to reach?
Yeah. So banner advertising, right? Digital advertising, that's going to be the most logical thing that's going to impact, right? You can't target folks with display ads without first-party data. But it's going to go a layer deeper than that, because you're not going to be able to capture and monitor intent data from third-party sources either. And what I mean by intent data is monitoring user behavior, right? So this phase out of third-party cookies is really, it's for security reasons, right? We want users to feel safe on the internet, right? That's what Chrome is doing. And the ability to track people anonymously is going away. And not just to serve them ads, but also to market to them via outbound outreach, sales outreach, marketing outreach, buying third-party sourced data, right? That you didn't secure yourself or via a first-party data source. You're not going to be able to follow up with those folks digitally. So it's going to go beyond just the display advertising piece of it. And it's going to really impact anyone who markets to customers or prospective customers. It's going to impact that part of your outbound strategy. So it's really massive.
Well, they can still do the display advertising, but they'll be guessing effectively.
Yeah. So the key thing for display advertisers is now twofold. One, you're going to have to start aggregating your own first party data, and or you're going to have to work with first party data providers who create content. So contextual advertising and contextual marketing, meaning websites that have valuable content, publishers, folks that have a first party data source and direct opted in and registered audience. As a marketer at a company, you're going to have relationships with those types of publishers and content providers. And then simultaneously, I'd recommend doing things like creating your own content, writing your own blogs, creating your own podcasts to aggregate your own first party data. So that's my high level advice for anyone, is do those two things, start doing them now. And it's not something that's going to happen overnight, but start putting out content, right? Start building relationships and think of the audiences you want to target. What websites do those folks go to, right? Where do they live? Where do they read content from on their lunch break? Where do they read content from when they have a problem? And then build relationships with those websites and look to see how you can partner with them or be a customer of that website to gather that first party data via business partnership. So that's really going to be super important. So contextual advertising with publishers, and then aggregating your own first party data by being a content curator and provider, essentially.
So do you think that where this goes is that the marketplaces currently, you can go to a third party place, you can place 1 million impressions, I'm just making this up, and they're going to distribute it to your audience based on possibly a cookie that you have as well, and match that cookie and try to follow that user across the internet. Now that marketplace, instead of just being that plug and play and that simple digital solution, it feels like we're going back to pre-2000, and we're going to have a marketplace of people who run blogs, who run podcasts, and who run basically their own sites, like you said. Because when you were talking, Rich, that's a big shift for a marketing department to basically shift from, we buy a majority of our ads and place ads, to we are now becoming a content creator. It sounds easy, but you know, I had somebody tell me the other day, like, oh, we'll just spin up a podcast. And I said, spin it up. You certainly can spin it up. But, and then this person, I'm not going to say who it is, got on there and he couldn't talk.
Yeah.
He didn't know how to interview someone or talk to someone or keep a conversation going, or even this conversation. You've naturally done it in this conversation because you've been on them, where you've said, oh, and we'll talk about that a little later. Why are we saying that? Because it's foreshadowing to keep you listening to this, right? Like, that's not magic. That takes skill, and you just can't spin it up. And to write content isn't as easy. Now, AI has made it easier, but I don't understand with that, and this is a lot of things I'm putting on the table here, so I'll have to turn over one card at a time, but that basically everybody can write content with AI now. So the real winners are actually people who can, I think, humans who write content, because you are going to have to put a human in the loop. So this is a very, you know, you're not going to whip that up overnight. But now, do you think, going back to the question, it feels like we're going to have marketplaces where content creators are direct to consumer, or we're going back to the old model where these people used to aggregate, a person would develop the relationship with all the content managers, not via cookie, but by human. And then they would buy 1 million impressions across all of these, yep, and then place the big ads. Because the truth of the matter, the thing that I learned, having been on the internet since 1996 in the early days, big advertisers, when we had Chevy and Ford and these people, they can't do a $5,000 deal. I mean, it's just not, yep, they're putting out too much money. So where does this all go? Do you think it goes to a marketplace, or do you think people are going to actually have to develop those relationships themselves?
Yeah, it's a great question. And to dissect what you said earlier, like programmatic advertising as we know it today is going away, right? And you mentioned this, like, oh, I can just place a bunch of ads and spend a bunch of money targeting someone who collected a cookie from somewhere. I don't know where. It's third party. I didn't capture it. And they're going to be able to target ads based off of that. That's totally going away. So to your point, you're going to have to target your digital advertising spend, right, for display on content that you're creating. But to your point, it's hard to do that at scale right from jump. Like, you can't just spin up a podcast and have a million subscribers and start churning out ads on those to the people on your website, right? That doesn't happen overnight. I do recommend folks start to do that. Companies who have marketing departments are going to have to invest more in content creators. And they can either do so by hiring people, right? New headcount for your company, person who are writing content. So this is people with technical acumen, depending on what you're talking about. And this isn't just for B2B, it's also for B2C. Goes both for both pieces. You mentioned Chevy and Ford, right? You need people who know about the cars that you're selling, right? They know about the engines, they know about all the inner workings if you're a gearhead. Same thing with B2B technology. Like, you're going to know someone who understands the data center, who understands networking and compute and server hardware, the whole thing, right? You can't hire lay people off the street to do this. But to your point about marketplaces, that's where that can come in, is because you can hire people to, do kind of gig work for you, right? It's like a third party contributor. So you can hire people like, hey, I want you to hire and write this blog for me, or contribute this article, or do this white paper for me, or do this podcast like we're doing, or do this video. That type of content is tremendously valuable. So those content creators and people who have acumen in the spaces that they are invested in, they're going to be so much more valuable, because corporations are going to have to start paying those people to create valuable content to capture first party data, right? So I'll say it again, because it's so important. It's like, the spend is going to go away from trading desks buying programmatic advertising to real people creating real content that offers a value to an audience. So I love this. And it's not just because I work at Tech Target. I think this is long overdue, because in all honesty, we're doing what we should be doing, right? We're focusing on things that are valuable, right? Not things that are shady and back channel things and tracking people that is anonymously and being sketchy, like speaking freely. Like, I love it, because it's going to make a lot of opportunities for people who care, who are investing time and energy and doing the things the right way. And it's going to create a lot of opportunities for people too, which is awesome, I think.
It's going to create competition, because if you're creating content, another piece that marketers need to think about is that they actually, it's one thing to write it. It's one thing to get it at video. It's another thing to do audio. It's another thing to even do written content. But then you need to understand SEO, and SEO is changing with how AI is going to answer these things. This is actually getting exponentially harder, because SEO as we used to know it is fundamentally changing. And I built my first company on all organic SEO. The truth, when I sold it, it had $505,000 worth of free organic traffic a month. That's crazy, right? I mean, that's just insane. Can you do that? I did do a site recently where I did write 400 articles with the help of AI, put a human in the loop. I put it on WordPress. I did some SEO things that I know how to do. And I just left it up there. I didn't promote it. And we're getting 5,600 visits a month right now on that content. I'm using it as an experiment to see what's going to happen, because eventually what you said, I think, Rich, is that if people start creating this content, then if you just war game all this stuff, it's like, where do you end up? And I'm always trying to be in the next game, not in this game, because there's going to be a lot of people who get caught with their pants down here.
Yep.
And say, well, how am I going to spend my budget? You're going to have to really figure that out. And the truth of the matter is that you like it. You say you're impartial, but which is fine. But
I'm not.
But the walled gardens win. Yeah. In fact, it's very hard for me not to think that and I didn't want to interrupt you way earlier when you were like, oh, well, Google's doing this for security. Google's doing this because Google ad spend has been going down, and this just boosted their ad spend because their walled garden is YouTube, Google, and every single site that Google owns.
Yep.
I mean, that's basically where we're going.
Yep. You're absolutely right. And yeah, so you can't go back in time. Right? You can't go back 25 years and create search400.com and or whatever website, right?
I wish.
You can't do that. I mean, we're TechTarget, we're lucky, but you can start now. And to your point, like, you need to have a team or a person, depending on the size of your organization, that has SEO chops. Because that is a moving target. Talking about Google, again, we have a whole team that's dedicated to making sure that our content ranks high organically. TechTarget has 5 million long tail queries where we rank number 1, 2, or 3 organically on Google.
Yeah, it's insane.
96% of our traffic is inbound organic. Now, can you create that in a year? No.
No.
But you need to focus on it. And we've been talking about this for a while, but it's vendors as publishers. And vendors can't just be vendors anymore. They have to be publishers and content creators, whether they're doing it directly or hiring someone or hiring a team, leveraging creators, to use a social media term like influencers, whatever you want to call it, but someone who can create content that people want to engage with. And nowadays too, with the way consumers are, there's a crossover on the B2B side. You have to create compelling content depending on the personas that you're trying to influence. So understand your audience, understand what types of content your audience likes. Like, are you targeting C-suite, right? Are you targeting millennials or Gen Z? Like, depending on the types of personas you're targeting, you need to have the content that speaks to those folks. So you need to have people who are thinking about this and who have history doing this and who are just keeping up, because it's a moving target. Like we talked about earlier, is before the podcast started, is like, this is something that changes dynamically, like constantly. And if you're not paying attention, and like, I think you said this, like, you're going to get left in the dust, and you need to be vigilant about it.
But all isn't lost. And this isn't an infomercial for TechTarget or any of these other walled gardens, but you can buy ads in these walled gardens because it requires login. And when it requires login, you do, the word isn't track. The user is in your site consuming things, and you're watching what that consumer does in that profile. So whether it's TechTarget, I mean, Facebook stock just went up because Facebook has Facebook, Instagram.
Yep.
I don't know that you can do that in WhatsApp, but they're in anything in their universe they own. The same thing with Google. The interesting thing with Apple is they've committed to not do that. So you can't, as best I know, you can't buy ads in app for Apple anything. I don't think you can buy ads in the Apple. Apple doesn't have a advertiser system.
Well, the thing is though, Apple is still capturing email though. So if you're using iTunes, right? If you have an Apple ID, that's, you have to have an email for that. So I think they do have first party data now.
No, they do, but they don't sell it.
What they do with it, I don't know.
No, they don't, because you can't, that's their whole thing, is your data is secure with us. Because yep. I've never been spammed on any Apple platform. And truthfully, Rich, if it was available, I would log into something Apple to log in to buy ads, and you can't.
What about the Apple podcast platform?
Apple podcast platform is completely private.
But people are selling ads on there, but who?
No, because Apple podcast is only reading the RSS feeds, okay, which are hosted from another source. Like for us, we use BuzzFeed and we use Lisbon. And the truth is, for being completely candid, the one problem with podcasts is we don't have first party data. Now, what we've done with all of the shows that we have, which you and I talked to before we jumped on live, which we can talk about now, is we do have an email list of 20,000 listeners.
Yep.
Now, why did I do that? Because I have no, I can see in each player, I can see the device, I can see the location, they guess on gender, which is probably some algorithm that's reading
interests
and something or email, right? Just straight up email, something like that. I can see locations. I can see downloads. I can see on the platform that plays it, percentage listened to.
Yep.
We have thousands of subscribers to our podcast. Like if I log into Apple Podcasts, I cannot see a list of who they are.
So that's not first party data. You're going to need emails moving forward.
So you're going to have to get emails, and we use lead magnets. So We're not going to probably do one for this show because there won't be time and I'm going to release it fast. But a lot of our shows, we will put a lead magnet in, which is effectively what TechTarget is doing. It's a lead magnet. It's useful.
Yep.
I mean, I publish my note as an idea. I publish my notes from books I read. Remember the old Cliff Notes?
Yeah.
So I
used them all throughout college.
You know, I publish Brandon's Cliff Notes. Well, why wouldn't you want Brandon's Cliff Notes? Because I'm pretty meticulous and I take notes.
Take good notes.
And in exchange for an email, that's a good deal.
It's valuable.
So you got to start thinking. But you had a comment about, you said the future, when we're sitting in my green room, which is, for listeners, my kitchen. It's a good green room though, right?
I mean, the lighting.
It's got a good view.
The lighting in there is amazing. Yes.
It's got a good view.
It does.
Is email. You said email is going to be the future, you think?
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're going to need to, and you mentioned this, using your clip, you know, your Cliff Notes, for example, you're going to have to be able to offer up something value to get someone to provide their email in exchange for that valuable information. So I think, I mean, I come from the world of like long form registration in B2B. So meaning you have to fill out 18 data points to
I hate those.
Right. So I don't think that's going to be a thing. Right.
And or it's going to work.
It won't work, especially for consumers, but you're going to have email. But the key point to get someone to enter their email address is you need something valuable, right? What do you call it? A lead magnet. Okay. A lead magnet, right? You're going to need some type of lead magnet for that user to be like, all right, because as a consumer, you know, as soon as you enter your email address, what's going to happen? You're going to get emails from whoever you entered into. Like, and why do you do that as a consumer? You sign up for whatever clothing company or someone who sells water bottles, wherever, you know that they're going to market to you and they're going to maybe send you a discount code, or they're going to maybe, when there's a sale next month or a new release, they're going to give you a heads up on it. So you have to value that information and that value exchange enough to offer up your email. So, but I think it's hard to do, but you just have to think about doing it and take action on doing so. Right. So I think companies are going to have to just be hyper focused on it. And that's going to be the new currency moving forward. Right. If it already hasn't been, which I think it should have been already, but moving forward, it's going to be the currency.
You know who may be the biggest winner is Amazon. They have your data, they have your purchasing, they have your browsing. With Google, they don't necessarily have your browsing. If you don't log in, I guess that's not considered a third party cookie. I don't know how they're doing that.
How they define it. But yeah, I mean, and Amazon is also a content creator and a content curator. So they have Amazon Music. They have Amazon Prime Video, which now they're selling ads on. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah, I'm totally annoyed by it.
Well, are you gonna pay the extra $3 a month? Or are you're gonna what's the ads?
I'm probably gonna get annoyed and I'm gonna pay the $2.99.
Either way, Amazon's gonna get paid. Right. So, but the thing is, Amazon is, they offer value in the form of content and a lot of other things too. But yeah, they're going to win. I mean, they're going to continue to win it. Wherever the goalposts are moving, like they're probably going to find a way to split the uprights. Right. I mean, it's Amazon. But yeah, we all have to kind of think and just be nimble and think about what we need to do to capture that email registration information and what type of valuable nuggets we can offer up to our potential customers to get them to do that.
You think email? I mean, people still use email. People have been saying email is going to go away for 20 years. Email doesn't go away in business. There's no other form of communication. People have said to me, oh, well, Slack was going to do it. Slack works for the first 2 weeks when there's no data in it. And as soon as it gets populated with tons of data, you're back to the same problem and you're back to email. Not to mention Slack will send you emails letting you know that you have Slack messages. I mean, it's a sort of a nonstop thing, but I don't know. I don't see email. I see kid. We had an intern, Elijah, this summer, just a freshman in college. And people were like, oh, well, young people don't use email. To be honest, he's more reliable on email than he is on text.
If you're in college, yeah, you have to have your @edu email. Like, that's how you communicate with the school, your teachers. Nowadays, everything is relying on email. And so, yeah, I think you see this as consumers too. Like the text message is another one. But what always comes before the text message opt-in is the email opt-in. I don't know that I've ever had someone prompt me to enter my mobile phone number before my email address on like signing up for a newsletter.
Well, we have made it optional, but they need to put in one.
One or the other, yeah.
Because both is super hard.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be interesting, I think, for the consumer side, if phone number opt-in will... Oh, that's an interesting thing.
So the text message response rates are much higher because the inbox has arguably gotten crowded. But by the same token, I think spam has been worked out. It still gets it wrong, but it does not get it wrong 15 like it did 15 years ago. So, and if you opt in to Patagonia or North Face or whatever brand you opt in, you've opted in to get those ads because they've delivered some sort of value with the discount. And the other thing that was going through my mind, Rich, is you know who the biggest winners are? Some of the biggest winners, but they've been doing it for years, is any retail chain that takes credit cards, like Walmart, Target, any of these big chains, they know what you, Starbucks,
yep.
They know everything about you. So it's interesting as we start to unpack this and talk about it, that while 45% of the market relies on third-party cookies, there is enough market opportunities if you don't want to build your own stuff that you will be able to advertise on. My gut tells me it's going to be more expensive.
Well, that's the other thing too. If it's more valuable real estate and walled garden inventory is finite, right? You can't manufacture page views in a walled garden. So it comes back to, all right, if that inventory is more valuable, is the cost dynamic going to change? That's the thing too, with programmatic advertising, it's very cheap, right? When you're targeting display ads based off of third party. Same thing with third party web scraped intent data. And I'm using air quotes when I say intent data. So that's far cheaper than first party data from a walled garden. Now, when that third party programmatic advertising vehicle goes away, and when that third party intent data offering goes away, does that mean that first party data is going to be more expensive? I don't know. It'll be more valuable. So
what is it? Does TechTarget sell on a CPM basis?
So for digital display, we do sell on a CPM basis. And then if you're buying like campaign-based lead gen programs, it's like on a cost per lead basis. And we also have our intent data SaaS platform, which is an annual subscription. And you can buy that based off of your total addressable market that you're targeting. So basically, for example, I target enterprise storage, right? So I'm going to target everyone who's active on enterprise storage, for example, just to use a very generic example.
So can you share general costs?
Yeah. Yeah. So everything that we do is based off of targeting primarily. So when I say targeting, I mean first geo. So we're a global company. About 50% of our audience is outside of the US. So what regions or countries are you targeting? And then also what types of audience bundles are you targeting, right? Like I said, storage, for example, or is it cloud computing? Is it, and then we can get more granular. So is it public? Is it private cloud? Is it hybrid cloud, right? So it really depends on how granular you want to get. And then as far as the packaging and pricing, it varies wildly. Right. Mm. If you want to get into our intent data SaaS platform at the base level for in North America, it'd be like $50,000 for the year. Right. That's like kind of to get into the package at a baseline. That's a good like foundational program for like a commercial customer of ours. Now, a lot of our customers historically, before we had our annual subscriptions, would buy campaign based media. More so, hey, I have a quarterly budget and I want to buy X number of leads or Y number of banner impressions or whatever it may be. And we can do that, and on it's very scalable. So depending on the customer's budget. But to your point, we work with enterprise, commercial, mid-market, all the way down to SMB. So, but we don't have folks who are spending hundreds of dollars on campaigns. It's like you said, it's five figures probably to start with something meaningful and impactful for a customer. So we try to have everything be palatable for our customers. But you know, you have to have enough volume of data to have it meaningful and impactful for the organization. So we want to make sure we're putting together thoughtful campaigns that way.
Did you serve any ads from third party marketplaces? Would you serve that up until this point?
On TechTarget, no.
No.
No, we only serve ads on TechTarget from advertisers.
From your advertising platform.
Yep.
Portal.
Yep. And if we ever had like remnant inventory, we would do like internal advertisements for like content, for example. So say we had a new ebook coming out and we're like, hey, check out this new ebook. If we had remnant inventory for whatever month on a site that maybe wasn't getting a lot of traffic that month, that's what we would do. But back to what I said earlier too, it's not like we have a ton of inventory, right? Because it's limited. Yeah, it's limited inventory. But then the CPMs really reflect that. So the CPMs are far higher than what you would pay on a programmatic advertising. So like a CPM for a programmatic ad could be sub $10,
mm-hmm.
right? Whereas like if you're buying O&O or owned and operated display advertising, I mean, it's going to be over $50 CPM, right?
That's a very targeted customer. You know a lot about them. It's verified. They've logged in to see, read more content. They are probably, in your case, have some sort of purchasing intent, or they're somewhere in the process of purchasing. They were unhappy with their current vendor, right? Whatever. I don't know. They're at Google and they want to go to Amazon, or Amazon wants to go to Microsoft Edge. I mean, that's basically what they're, or Snowflake or whatever it is, they're looking to do that. The thing that I was thinking about, going back to the podcast example, and that's why I was asking you about the ad platform for TechTarget, is that for podcasts, I cannot buy ads on Apple. And that's the interesting play, because I think Apple put a stake in the sand and said, we're not going to sell our users' data, which has made other companies look evil.
Yeah.
In many ways. But on Spotify, I can buy ads and I can target, because Spotify does know, just like TechTarget or any other login. I think what happens with Google is you log into your Gmail and you forget you're logged in, and then they...
You're always logged in.
Right. You're really always logged in, especially if you sync your browser.
Yep.
So Google is getting that information, but you're going to basically... I think the advantage of those marketplaces was that I could go to that marketplace and I could hit 100 different sites. Right. Whereas right now, if I want to advertise on podcasts, I'm almost where we're going, which is I got to go to Spotify, I got to go to Overcast, I've got to go to Goodreads, I've got to go to whatever else site that's not coming to mind right now. And I have to manage those individually. And that's basically where we're going back to.
Yeah. You're going to have to manage those vendor partnerships with whatever valuable media outlets that you want to work with. Right.
Individually with separate dashboards.
Yeah. Well, that presents another opportunity, though, for platforms that will aggregate that.
Sometime. And there have been those, like their Stack, STAQ, which I think was recently or last year sold, aggregated a lot of regular advertising dashboards into one. But I've also seen this movement away from these open, back in 10 years ago, 15 years ago, people were leaving things open. Twitter had an open API. You see Twitter shutting that down because they want their own walled garden. They want to sell all of that.
Yep.
So we're starting to see places where, sure, or you're seeing APIs being opened. We just, for our Trevely Contacts product or SaaS, we had to go through a Google audit for the API. So you're seeing things change, not just like, hey, Rich, we're going to go integrate with Gmail tonight and we would write that. And you can't do that. I mean, now they're starting to do checks and close that down. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this all plays out. Because if you do have that data, first party data, you just became more valuable overnight. And I don't, what do you think happens to these marketplaces? There's some public companies out there that are doing these third party cookie track. What happens to them?
Yeah. I mean, when I said the stat earlier, 45% of companies are spending more than half of their digital advertising spend on third party, on tactics that leverage third party.
So what's going to happen to those companies that offer that?
They're going to have to call an audible, hire people who create content.
Oh, you think that's what they're going to do?
They should.
That's like a really big pivot.
They should hire people to create content. They can hire people for contract work to create content, or from TechTarget's point of view, we would love them to reach out to contextual advertisers to partner with folks who have first party data, those walled gardens you talked about. So they're going to have to do either of those things. Ideally, they're going to do both. Because like we said a few times already, you're not going to be able to create an audience overnight with spinning up a podcast, right? But you should do those things. But it's going to present opportunities for smart people. So people who create content, people who monitor metrics, right? You talked about like having to manage the different dashboards across multiple different providers. There's going to create an opportunity for people who understand that and have acumen in doing so. So that role within the marketing operations function and the sales operations function is going to be that much more important. There's going to be companies, like you said, there's companies that are going to aggregate that kind of interface for you. That's going to present an opportunity. And so, because at the end of the day, you're still going to be spending on marketing as a company, and you need to be able to point back to that ROI. And that's the other thing with programmatic advertising, which is a knock on it from my point of view, is that it's hard to prove tangible ROI on programmatic advertising, right? Because if I'm spending on display advertising, it's more like air cover. And if you're buying it that's leveraging third-party data, you don't really know who it's targeting and in what mind frame they're in. It's a lot of wasted spend. So yeah, it's cheap, but you're getting what you pay for, right? Because you don't know where this cookie came from. It's anonymous. You don't know what mindset this user is in. Are they in a work mindset? Are they in a buying mindset? Or are they like, you know, on their couch in the evening, watching Netflix on one, scrolling on the other, and on their iPad, whatever. Like, you want to catch people in the right context. It's all about the mindset that they're in when they're engaging with your content. So I think for advertisers and marketers, that's going to be more paramount, even though you're going to have to spend more to do so. But at the end of the day, it'll be more impactful for businesses from a conversion standpoint. And then their ability to track that conversion will be easier. Because with display ads, it's hard to point to bottom of the funnel metrics from a display ad, right? I remember back when in my early days, someone asked me what the CPL was for a brand, a banner advertisement. Meaning like, hey, how many registrants for this webinar are we going to get from this banner advertisement? And at the time I was like, huh. I'm like, well, that's not how we sell them, but I'm like trying to go back. So I did some math and was looking at like average click-through rates, right? From banner to like an exit link. So like to your registration form. And then the conversion typically on like, this is a long tail reg form. It was like whatever, 16, 18, 20 data points, the average drop off from that. And so, and the cost per lead ended up being in the thousands of dollars, right? From that banner to actually how many people are going to register for an ad. So I think it's going to get closer to those more meaningful conversion metrics, right? In B2B, people care about marketing sourced leads, marketing sourced pipeline, right? Influence pipeline, and ultimately close one revenue. So I think the tactics that you're going to have to rely on are going to be closer to those metrics than a banner ad that's served via like a third party trading desk targeting programmatic. So I think ultimately it will be a good thing for folks who are measuring tangible business impact on spend, which should be everybody that's a business stakeholder.
I'm just listening to you thinking, like, do people still spend money on banner ads?
They do. I would say,
I mean, for branding purposes, I guess, like on I'm just thinking when you were talking, I was like, do I even notice them? I can't recall one that I've noticed. Depending if it's in your Instagram feed, they're obvious, but I still can't remember what one.
That's the thing, is the click-through rates over the years have gone way down. And you might know this from when the internet started, like the click-through rate on the first banner advertisement was like insanely high.
That's because all we had.
Right? But now industry click-through rates are like very, very, very low. Now, where it can become valuable is just the awareness and consideration of that brand over time that will impact more down funnel marketing tactics that you're doing. So to break that down, if you run targeted display ads contextually aligned where that buyer is in the right mindset alongside other down funnel tactics like registration protected webinars or PDF based content, case studies, webinar, you know, videos, white papers, that sort of thing, the conversion rate will increase. We've done a study on this based off of the consistent display ads running at that same targeted intent pool of audience. And to your point, Brendan, you said like, oh, I don't remember the brands, but over time, it can almost be subconscious where if there's a vendor you've never heard of, right? I'm not talking about the Amazons and the Googles and the AWSs of the world. I'm talking about smaller unknown companies that are running targeted display at you that you may over time then be more willing to engage with their content. You may be more willing to take a call from their sales rep. Now, is that a direct correlation? No, but you can see an impact on that. And so if you're a sales rep calling into an account and you know that account has had a consistent targeted display campaign against them, like ABM, right? An account-based marketing approach. You know there's been a consistent content marketing approach to that account, meaning they're getting timely emails in their inbox based off of their research habits saying, hey, based off of your research on XYZ topic, we thought you'd like this podcast. We thought you'd check out this webinar. You might find this video interesting. Now, if I'm a seller calling into that account, the likelihood of my success with having someone take my call is so much higher than an account that is getting cold outreach from a seller that's had no marketing air cover. Now, again, it's not a direct correlation to conversion, but when you compare the two, an account who has seen marketing air cover versus one that has not, you're going to see the higher conversion rates on the one that has.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, I mean, obviously branding works. The problem is you just don't know when it works or how it works. So you basically have to take your full marketing spend and divide it by the amount of deals you've done and then get your customer acquisition cost that way and sort of back out what the value was if you can track your other metrics.
Yeah. And this is, people ask me this all the time. It's like, all right, my budget's down. What should I buy? Right. And it's a problem that everyone has. It's like, what can I spend today that will impact my numbers this quarter? Right? That's hard.
Well, I'd be like, how long's your pipeline? What's your sales cycle? How much is your product? I mean, isn't there about 50 other things that...
There is, right? You're absolutely right. But taking all that out of the equation and just assuming that those are things that we're going to talk about, it's what you do today that's going to impact your business two quarters from now, right? And so that's where display and top of funnel marketing tactics make an impact. But people are always looking for that low hanging fruit. Like, hey, where can I get leads that are looking to buy this quarter? Because we're really behind on our pipeline numbers this quarter. It's like, yeah, we have bottom of the funnel programs we can run. But in a perfect world, we'd already be influencing these folks two quarters ago. So let's be forward looking and say, hey, let's what we should be doing moving forward. Let's do what we can, see what we can do to do a Band-Aid for this quarter and get you some low hanging fruit. But then also let's be smart and make an impact now and start so that two quarters from now, you're not calling me with the same problem. And it's hard for people to conceptualize that because everyone wants instant gratification. But people are managed that way. They're like, oh, we need our pipeline numbers for this quarter. So it's hard to kind of think that way. But I think the most successful operators do.
What do you think the average sales cycle over the tech market that you guys serve to get from interest? And I know it differs, right? Yep. Because you're going to like a 50 person company is going to be much different than a 5,000.
Yeah, varies wildly. On average, 6 to 9 months.
That's the sales cycle that you can...
On average. But to your point, SMB, lower end of the commercial mid-market, yeah, you could have a 60, 90-day sales cycle, especially if the deal size is smaller. But if you have seven-figure enterprise sales cycles, 12 to 18 months, right? And there's 15 stakeholders and it's seven figures, those deals are not being decided in 3 months. Unless it's like a very unique circumstance. And if you're in sales, like you've had those scenarios that bluebirds and you get a deal like that, but that is not typical. You cannot plan for that in your forecast, right? And be like, oh yeah, I'm going to get this seven-figure deal that I'm going to open up this quarter and close this quarter. Like that's not...
I've had a lot of salespeople show up on Fridays and tell me that, Rich.
Well, that's the thing. It can happen. You can't build... You can't build your pipeline off of it.
No.
But yeah, I mean, and that's the thing too. When we sell mostly to marketing folks. And so the most successful marketing people have some sales acumen and they've either been in sales themselves, they meet regularly with salespeople, or better yet, they're on customer sales calls at least once a quarter, right? Because they need to understand that dynamic. You need to understand, like you said, Brandon, like, oh, what's the sales cycle? What's the average deal size? What's the average cadence it takes for me to get someone to agree to take a meeting, right? If I'm an inside salesperson or a BDR, like you need to understand those things as a marketer to be able to like prove meaningful business impact. And that's the thing too, when you're trying to level up within an organization to like more boardroom level, marketing is usually looked at as a cost center. So what a companies usually cut first. It's like marketing headcount and marketing spend. But if you as a marketing person can put yourself in a salesperson's kind of shoes and you can look at it from a sales perspective and your impact and enablement of the sales motion, you'll be that much more beneficial to that boardroom conversation. And I think you need to think in those terms to be more meaningful to that organization. So we're in a unique position where I am is because like I talked a lot to marketing people and I also talked a lot to salespeople and I'm a salesperson. So I have that kind of perspective that is helpful because at the end of the day, if you understand what your customers care about, meaning like what their boss tasks them with, like what are their KPIs, what are their metrics they have to hit? And it may be, hey, I need pipeline this quarter. Okay, maybe you need to get a meeting with their boss, right? And talk about those metrics and say, hey, we can have this short-term metric too, but also let's look 6 months out as far as marketing influenced close one revenue, right? Is that beneficial to you too? Or is it just like, hey, in quarter marketing sourced meetings, right? Okay, that's like a top funnel metric. So it's not one size fits all, but you need to just be kind of thoughtful about the overall business impact of what you're doing, even if you're just buying digital display advertising, right? Because the impact of it is bigger than that. So as marketing people, you just need to think that way.
And obviously, I think we're talking a lot more today about B2B than we are B2C. B2C is a sort of a different animal. And if you have an e-commerce site, which I mean, most of the B2C stuff is you're selling some sort of product. It's a clothing, I don't know. That's what I see online all the time.
Retail,
anything like that. That's going to be a very different process and probably bought differently. I don't think, you know, unless you're a big brand like Gap or something where branding is affecting you, most of those people are trying to go directly for customer acquisition costs. Like how many clicks am I going to get and how many is going to convert and how many is going to empty the cart, you know, leave the cart empty and then retarget.
More transactional. Yeah. I met my wife at TechTarget. So she was in both the sales and the product marketing org at TechTarget. But then she went and left TechTarget and went to a company called AdRoll.
Oh, yeah.
They're still around. They're called, what are they called now? Anyways, they do ad retargeting. But she was on the consumer. A lot of it was on the consumer side. But to your point, it's like, can I buy this ad and conversion from this ad to like a shopping cart? And then to your point, like how many of those shopping carts check out to close? And the attribution is so much easier in B2C because I can say, oh, I spent $6 on this banner.
Yep.
And it got me a $73 average sale price. So not to say that it's an easier job for consumer marketing folks. It's just the conversion metrics are much more abbreviated, right? More accelerated.
And more straightforward. Like I advertise for my book on Amazon just to give it exposure. And I see everything. I know exactly how many impressions. I know what my customer acquisition cost is. It's a walled garden. They know everything. Now they don't, ironically, Amazon does not give me the buyers.
Yeah.
Which is...
That's the most valuable thing though.
Well,
for them.
It'd be for me too. If I could send them an email and then sell my next book or do whatever.
You mean after they convert?
Yeah. So I can't see that on Amazon. Now, maybe at some high tier, somebody listening to this, if you're like a super seller on Amazon and you can see that data, then please write me my emails and I'd love to hear that.
Yeah.
I just haven't heard that.
I wonder if you could buy that. You'd have to pay way more money though.
Because, I don't think they sell it.
You know why though? Because they're no longer Amazon's customer. They're your customer. Because if they're still the middleman, they're still necessary. So,
well, the way to get around that is not be fulfilled by Amazon and you fulfill it. But if you do the economics on that, they've made it economically advisable. Which, hey, look, if we owned Amazon, Rich, we'd do the same thing.
Yeah, we would.
Because we'd have a space company and a 500-foot boat. And
it's hard, too. Like you said, the logistics of fulfillment is really challenging. It's like...
It almost doesn't make sense to do fulfillment. I mean, we do on-demand printing with our book. We do have... Even our hardback cover book is on-demand.
Are you talking about this book you gave me?
Yeah, that book. So I'm just using these examples where I know, you know, as we're talking, where I have firsthand knowledge of these back ends, and the B2C is definitely easier, more straightforward. But real quick, you mentioned retargeting. Retargeting's, we didn't directly talk about this, but retargeting's over.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So I said like programmatic earlier, for those who aren't in the industry, like they got ad retargeting, right? And retargeting, to take it a level further. So we all have experienced this. So say you go to a website, you said, we're talking retail. So you're on Patagonia.com. And then you go to another website and you, oddly enough, there's Patagonia banners everywhere. That's ad retargeting. Now, Patagonia did that leveraging third-party cookies, right? Because you're on a different website.
That's over.
That's gone. So I'll be interested to see what happens to the companies who rely exclusively on
retargeting. That's a big deal.
It's huge. You know, and as a consumer, I'm in the industry, so like I can recognize it, but I think it's really brilliant, right? It's like,
of course.
Yeah. And the conversion rates are high. So that's Adroll, the company my wife went to work at. She doesn't work there anymore, but they did really well.
They were arguably very evil back in the day in the sense of, I mean, I shouldn't say evil.
No, but
I should say very, very aggressive. Adroll was very aggressive.
People didn't like it because it's like Big Brother.
Well, they installed software back in the early internet.
And there was no opt-in involved.
No, it automatically installed software.
So think about that. We're getting away from these things, which I think is a good thing. But, you know, we're just going to have to be nimble.
I don't know, as a marketer, Rich, I'd like to know everything about the customer. But in the walled garden, you actually know more than the third-party cookie.
We do.
Arguably, you do.
Yep. But again, it takes time and effort and money to build those audiences yourself. So you need to do those things, right? Start if you haven't. Start today. And then you also need to partner with other first-party data aggregators and publishers and build relationships with them, whether that's a partnership, a paid vendor, customer relationship, whatever it is. Like, you're going to have to move money from programmatic ad spend and retargeting ad spend to first-party owned and operated display intent data, whatever you're buying. So you're just going to have to do it.
And email is my first inclination, but email is Google's cracked down on that with the 5,000. It's not over.
Yep.
It's not over. You got to register. You got to verify if your spam rate's too high, all of these things. And that's going to take a full-time staff.
You have to monitor it every day.
Every send.
So that's already happened too.
I mean, for some people listening, I'm like, oh, well, we already do that. Yeah, of course you do. But not everybody does that because they've been getting away with maybe not registering their DMARC card or whatever. I mean, I know people who have 100,000 email lists who did just winging it.
And this goes, we were talking about this before we got on the podcast today. You need to have thoughtful email copy and subject lines that pertain to that individual buyer's intent in real time. That's how you get around those issues. If you have generic email copy and shitty subject lines, that you're going to get flagged. But if you have personalized subject lines with relevant email copy that is based off of that user's intent that day, right? Those emails are not going to get flagged. So again, I think these are good things. So we just have to.
Well, it's going to separate the real marketers from the not real marketers. I was telling you, and I play around with this, and I don't send thousands, but I do send hundreds. And I just am very thoughtful around aligning. I learned a lot of this, quite candidly, at America Online when I worked in marketing analysis back in the early 2000s, just because we could press a button and serve 100. I mean, when I say 100 million, we could serve 100 million impressions relatively quickly. We had 30 million members and 50 ads on a page, right? So you could serve that. But what I realized is that you really have to have alignment. And if you have alignment, you can see high open rates. When someone says, I tried email, Brandon, it doesn't work, I get 15% open rate, you're not trying hard enough, because I have one campaign that's at 73% and the other one averages 53%. And these have been running for years, not months, right? So this is over time, over time. But the reason is because of what you said. It aligns and you've segmented your list. If you don't segment your list and you're sending a general email list out to people who want web hosting, and you didn't target that people who were looking for web hosting for databases, right, or something specific, you're not going to see the same response rate. You might even see the open rate.
Yep.
So you're really going to have to get smarter about segmenting your data and testing the data and then writing copy, which is a whole other skill.
It is. Yeah. You can't spray and pray anymore. You never should have been doing it.
Well, it did work back in the day. I mean, it did work because at scale, you could send 1 million emails a day.
Yep.
And it didn't matter.
Yeah.
It matters now.
Well, it matters now because it's going to be audience fatigue. People are going to opt out and you're going to get flagged with Google, Gmail, and you're going to be in the penalty box.
And you're going to have to make it really good. I have that one campaign that's at 73%. I did get a person to write back. And they're like, I get all these cold emails every day. Can you just take me off your email list? And I write back personally. And that's what for somebody listening, you can't let those go. In fact, some of those have turned into sales.
That happens to me too. So
does it?
Yeah. I'm in sales and I'm in sales leadership, but I still prospect daily, but I don't use Outreach or Sales Loft or anything. I write my own
email. Yeah. That's the way to do it.
And sometimes this doesn't really happen that much, but sometimes people will be like, take me off your list or something.
I write back. It's not a list.
Well, yeah. It's like, my name is Rich and I wrote you this email because I saw this article or was on your LinkedIn, whatever. So it kind of disarms people a little bit, but yeah, I think that happening is rare if you take the time to do it, but it's not as scalable either. So it's personalization at scale, which is a big thing in outbound. So
an AI has attempted to do this. The problem with that is when it gets it wrong,
it's wrong.
You're in big trouble.
And it's so obvious too. Yeah. You know, if it's off.
I got one today. And the other thing I'll say to listeners out there, and this may be obvious to some people, but I don't know how obvious it is, Rich, because I get emails every day that do this. They're filling in the blank. This person, my name's Brandon White. Somebody said, White, blah, 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 blah. They had the old name of my old show.
Yep.
So we're on the marketing show, but I had another show called Edge and it's now called the Brandon White Show. And they're still saying Edge. Well, Edge has been gone that brand has been gone for a year. I just renamed it,
yep.
Which means that they got an old database that they've got, that they plugged that in and they probably wrote it with AI.
Yep.
If you're listening to this and that's your strategy, you better have a way around mass email at scale without getting dinged or you're done.
That email will never get converted.
And I don't want to convert. You're going to get shut down on that campaign.
Yeah. At the very least, you're going to, no chance I will buy from this person.
No, I just think you have to be more thoughtful these days. I mean, we did some really basic things with those lead magnets just because we're talking about it and you're really going to have to get first party data. Is we just matched everything, Rich. And that's really what we're talking about here. If you match something, and I'm going to use this as not a very good example, but if you were looking at, you wanted to switch for our Trevally SaaS, we are upgrading from a MySQL database and we're going to go probably to a managed database and maybe NoSQL, but maybe Aurora.
Yep.
And we've been looking, I've been reading, I think we were on RGS. It's RGS, is that right? I think it's RGS. Somebody will correct me, I'm sure, if I'm wrong. And we want to go to Aurora. Well, if I'm researching Aurora and I get a informative something, right? Article, email, call, text. To be honest with you, I really don't care.
Yep.
What I care about is that it's aligned and it offers value and doesn't just sell me, which is, hey, I can get you this. No, that doesn't help me.
Yeah. That's the key. You always have to offer up something of value before you ask of something of value in return. That's just
These are basics, but people are getting it wrong.
Yeah. It's a human thing. Like think about it in your personal life. Like you can't just go around take from people. Like after a while, people are going to be like, what's up with this guy?
Right. You know? Don't talk to that guy, Rich. That guy's been in town taking for the last year.
Yeah. So think about it. It's the same thing. You know, whether it's B2B or B2C, like we're all people. And when you're emailing someone, like the person on the other end of the email.
Well, I think that's very important. I think it's a good place to wrap up. I am going to ask you for some tips before we go for listeners, but you do have to realize that people are reading our marketing. These are real people. You're going to have a relationship with that human in some capacity in that sales process. And what do you want that to be? Do you want it to be a cheap pickup line at a bar? Or if you're at a bar, do you want it to be a more thoughtful conversation that wasn't trying to get an immediate win? And I think if you can think about that, it would be good. But this has been a good conversation. If you were to give, and this could be three things, I'm going to ask you for three tips to give listeners. We could have already talked about it, but with this shift from third-party data, third-party cookies going away, and the inability to basically track, retarget, and use that exact outlet, what three pieces of advice would you give marketers who's listening to this in the transition? Because you as a listener now have 10 months. We're recording this in February, like time's ticking.
Yeah. Find out where your audience lives. So tactically go to Google, type in a couple of long tail queries and find out the publishers that rank the highest organically. Go to those websites and contact the salespeople, right? Or talk to someone in marketing, depending on your role. Have a conversation with their marketing leadership. Talk to someone in product. I don't know. Depending on who you are. Find out where your audience lives and that's where you want to be. Two, start creating content that's valuable. Spin up a podcast or start blogging. It doesn't have to be good. You just have to do it. And you'll get better with practice, like we talked about with podcasting earlier. And then three, and I said it like 5 minutes ago, but like, remember, we're dealing with people here. It's not B2C. It's not B2B. Like, you're marketing to human beings. So make sure you treat them that way and think of how you'd like to be spoken to and emailed to and use that when you're reaching out to other people. So. Yeah, that's it.
Well, cool. I think those are three great pieces of advice, Rich. Thanks for coming in to the studio. Where's the best place? LinkedIn? We can put that in the show notes. People want to reach out.
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn, active on Twitter. So Instagram too. So yeah, you can find me.
I'll put it all in the show notes. Rich, thanks a lot, man. It's been fun.
Hey, till next time.
Bye, everyone.